Court for accepting the appointment and ably representing your defendant. Okay. Case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed to the sixth case, Muir versus Ashcroft. Mr. Eggman, huh?
Thank you, Judge. May it please the court. Last but hopefully not the least, I have an immigration case, totally different from what's been transpiring here today. I have a lot of issues with the conduct below, in the proceedings below. That Ms. Moore did not have any chance whatsoever with this judge, with Judge Vinegar. It was completely a travesty of justice what happened, and the doctrine of fundamental fairness was truly abridged. The judge prejudged the case, in essence. Initially, the testimony was that this person had come to the United States from Saudi Arabia by way of Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. And the judge was saying, okay, we'll send him back to Addis Ababa. And the petitioner made the argument that because of the war between Eritrea and Ethiopia, that if they send her there, she'll be persecuted, then she'll be shipped right back to Eritrea. Then just said, okay, I'll send him to Eritrea. Then the petitioner made the argument, if you send me to Eritrea, I made Jehovah's Witness, I did not put in the 1992 referendum, there's a list, there's all these things that would depict me as an anti-government, so Jehovah's Witness, I'll be persecuted. Then the judge says, okay, then we'll send you to Ethiopia again. So it was as if he was grasping at straws to find a way to defraud this petitioner. Of all the errors, I think the most blatant is the fact that the immigration judge relied on the asylum officer's assessment. You have an asylum officer, there's no videotape, no direct, there's no way to know what was asked and what was answered, but the judge relied almost entirely on the asylum officer's assessment. And the asylum officer never even showed up in court or make herself available through telephonic testimony to be cross-examined on how she came about her alleged credibility determination. This is in direct affront to the BIA's case in matter of SS, which in that case, the BIA clearly states that when at the new asylum proceedings, the applicant credibility is placed in issue because of alleged statements made at the asylum interview, a review requires a reliable record of what transpired at that interview. This record might be preserved in a handwritten account of the specific questions asked of the applicant and his specific responses to those questions. Such question and answer statements could be signed by the applicant as an accurate summary of the interview. Alternatively, a suitable record could be produced through transcription of an electronic recording of an asylum interview. At a minimum, the record must contain a meaningful, clear, and reliable summary of the statements made by the applicant at the interview. The board needs to know what transpired in the proceedings before the asylum officer, before we can evaluate questions with respect to credibility arising
now,
from the interview.
She was ordered removed to Ethiopia. So, do you have any reason to think that Ethiopia, and then as an alternative to retreat, do you have any reason to think that Ethiopia would not accept her?
Of course, Your Honor. If you look at the State Department country reports, because that's really the gospel that most, the way most IJs rule and most BIA panels see it, even relying on that, that shows clearly that if you're aboriginally from Eritrea, they will in fact ship you there, shipping people that have lived there all their lives. Now, if you come upon from the United States, there's no way they'll accept them.
So Ethiopia doesn't persecute Jehovah's Witnesses, but they persecute
Eritrea. Correct.
So you think she would end up in Eritrea?
Yes,
either
definitely.
Directly or indirectly?
Definitely. I don't even think if the best that Ethiopia would do if she lands in Addis Ababa would be to put her in detention and then ship her to Eritrea, where she will again be put in custody.
And is she divorced from her husband now?
Yes, Your Honor, she is divorced. She had married an Oromo gentleman who totally abused her in Saudi Arabia, which I guess she's not from Saudi Arabia, so I wouldn't call it past persecution, but she was beat a lot because she was a Jehovah's Witness. This man changed his religion for her. That's the reason why she married him. But as soon as he got to Saudi Arabia, which is a Muslim nation, he can't even wear a cross in Saudi Arabia, their husband changed back to being Muslim and required that she wear a veil. And she bailed out. She was lucky to get a visa from the U.S. Embassy in Saudi Arabia, and then came to the United States to visit her family. Every member of her family lives reside in the United States, including the parents, who are permanent residents. There's a sister who's a U.S. citizen, who in fact has showed up to testify, and the immigration judge refused to listen to her testimony, and also excluded the one concrete evidence that she had, which is an ID card showing she's a Jehovah's Witness. The judge excluded that also from the evidence, then turned around and said that she has no corroboration. You can't have it both ways. And there was no legitimate reason offered by the judge for excluding her sister's testimony. Her sister, who was granted asylum, she actually came as a refugee from a neighboring country. And also, the BIA, the board, and the immigration judge, since the board never really decided the case, the board did what they've been doing since they had the directive from Attorney General to clean up their act. So they look at these cases, sometimes they don't even read them, and they just affirm them without opinion, which is what happened in this case. And it's particularly, I'm not saying that affirming a case without opinion in itself is unconstitutional, because many cases have said it's not. But in this case, where the immigration judge essentially, his decision does not follow precedent and contains errors that are material and prejudice the petitioner. In that case, they cannot, a one-member BIA judge cannot affirm without opinion in a case like this. That's what I think is a crucial violation here. Thirdly, this judge applied an incorrect standard. The standard in asylum cases are very, very clear. It's been clear for a very long time. Reasonable person standard. This was established in matter of Cardozo Fonseca. The judge here applied standard that is applied to past persecution, which is preponderance of evidence. In Cardozo Fonseca and other cases, courts after all courts and the Supreme Court had ruled that less than 50% chance that somebody may be persecuted is sufficient. Even a 1 in 10 chance has been stated to be sufficient. Now, the judge is applying, and I'll read exactly what the judge said in the case. Judge Binnicker says, I would not find that the record establishes by a preponderance of the evidence that the respondent was either persecuted in the past or has established a well-founded fear of persecution in the future, either because of her religion from Ethiopia or Eritrea. And
The government suggests this is waived, this argument.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
That you waived this argument.
How is it?
Well, you didn't raise it in before the... you didn't in your reply brief, you don't mention it, right? You don't answer their waiver argument. But
Your Honor,
you didn't raise it before the board, right?
I came into this case, Your Honor, at the circuit court level. I did not represent, I'm from Minneapolis. I did not represent.
No, I read the brief. I know where you're from.
Yes. I did not represent the petitioner before the immigration judge. But I did not come up with from the record that the argument was waived.
Well, that's what the Attorney General argued.
Another issue that is clearly important is the fact that the State Department country reports does in fact indicate that Jehovah's Witnesses are persecuted in Eritrea and that is sanctioned by the government. And furthermore, this court has held in several cases that official government sanction of policy of discrimination against minority groups is persecution. And there's the case there, Booker v. INS 109 F3rd 399, 7th Circuit, 1997, and another similarly named case, Booker v. INS 77 F3rd 210, 7th Circuit, 1996. In my research, let us just come up here and make this argument. I was looking through the Seventh Circuit cases, and there's a case that was decided a couple of weeks ago by this circuit. It's called Janet Wathi v. John Ashcroft. It's case number 02-3676. In that case,
have you informed the government of that case prior to just now?
No, Your Honor.
Well, our rules require that, and obviously you may submit that case to us by way of our rules 28J, and we'll consider that, but due notice has to be given to the government.
I will certainly submit it to the government. You know, I think it's very critical to the issue here, and it's really strikingly on point.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Cunningham?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm John Cunningham from the Department of Justice, appearing on behalf of the Attorney General. I'll just very briefly address the due process arguments raised by my colleague in his remarks. Most of these are subject to a failure to exhaust or waiver argument. Certainly his contention that the immigration judge applied the wrong standard of proof in determining whether the petitioner had a well-founded fear of a return to Ethiopia or Eritrea was not raised before the board, and Judge Flom, that's not actually a waiver argument. It's stronger than that. It's a failure to exhaust, which means that this court doesn't have jurisdiction to address it.
Well, I understand. I mean, she certainly argued that she would be persecuted if she ended up in Eritrea because she's a Jehovah's Witness.
That's correct, Your Honor. But the technical argument that I understood my colleague to be making is that by using the phrase preponderance of the evidence, the immigration judge somehow used the wrong standard. The immigration judge didn't exclude any evidence. The testimony of the sister was offered in a written statement during the hearing. The immigration judge accepted that. The question was raised, he raised it, whether either side wished the sister to testify. And my colleague's predecessor, counsel for the petitioner, said no, he didn't wish that. And the INS said he didn't wish to cross-examine her, so the statement was simply accepted.
Does the statement support her position that she attends a temple, Jehovah's Witness temple in Chicago?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. There is one fleeting reference to her claim that she's a Jehovah's Witness in the statement. The sister simply says, as my sister is a devout Jehovah's Witness. Didn't give the immigration court, and doesn't give this court any specific information about where she attends, what temple she attends.
Why does that matter? I find extremely questionable all this business in your brief and the IJ business about quizzing people about their religion. I mean, if you ask the average Catholic who founded the Catholic Church, do you really think he knows the answer? And do you think Catholics carry little identification cards saying, I'm a Catholic?
This is a difficult issue, Your Honor, and it raises sensitivities that questioning people on their political opinion doesn't seem to raise. But the two are twinned, I think, in my view, because unlike, say, race...
No, I think it's perfectly fine to inquire whether a person is pretending to be a Jehovah's Witness. But the notion that the way you find out is by asking, giving a quiz, you know, who founded it, what's the significance of this or that, because most religious people do not take an interest in the details of their religion. But also, I don't get the logic. It seems to me, and maybe this is wrong, if she's sent back to Ethiopia, they're quite likely to send her to Eritrea. They don't like Eritreans. She ends up in Eritrea. We know, it's in your brief, that Eritrea persecutes Jehovah's Witnesses. Now, what the IJ says, when he's not disbelieving that she is a Jehovah's Witness, is, well, since, as he put it, she's not a religious zealot. And therefore, the Eritreans won't know that she's a Jehovah's Witness. So what you're saying is, it's not persecution. You don't have a reasonable fear of future persecution
transfer on a religious basis if you can conceal your religious identity from the authorities. Now, that's not the law, surely.
No, it's not the law, Your Honor, but may I begin by first disagreeing respectfully with the representations made by my colleague and by the assumption built into your question, which is that if Ms. Mahour is sent back to Ethiopia, she will then be transported forcibly to Eritrea. And here we have another very recent decision by this court. First, I would like to note that I did know about the Uwase case, which was issued a couple of weeks ago. My client, or my colleague, mentioned this. But this case came out just 2 days ago, and it was literally impossible for me to get a 28-J letter to the court. This is Medhin, M-E-D-H-I-N, versus Ashcroft, decided 2 days ago. Judge Flom, you wrote the opinion. The Westlaw citation is 2003 Westlaw 228-36850. I will submit a 28-J letter on this case and on Uwase. The relevance of Medhin is that there the court took judicial notice of a 2002 State Department report on human rights practices in Ethiopia and took judicial notice of the fact that the Ethiopian government had stopped forcibly deporting people of Eritrean origin to Eritrea. This is as a result of a June 2000 ceasefire agreement between the two governments. The linchpin of my colleague's argument is therefore gone.
No, but we can take judicial notice of the country reports, but we do not take judicial notice of the facts asserted in the country reports. In fact, our opinions say country reports have to be looked at carefully, even skeptically, because the State Department is reluctant to criticize countries with which we have friendly relations. There may well be an issue as to whether she ends up in Eritrea. Of course, the order that he drafted doesn't put it that way. It says if Ethiopia refuses to take her, she goes to Eritrea. Now, Ethiopia, even if it doesn't forcibly transport the Eritreans across the border anymore, they may very well decide not to accept her back. And if they don't accept her back, she goes automatically to Eritrea. And there, if she is a Jehovah's Witness, even if she's not a religious zealot, she faces persecution.
It is. Eritrea was identified by the immigration judge as the alternative country of removal. Your Honor is correct. There is always the possibility that the Ethiopian government might refuse to accept her. There is nothing in the record to suggest that that would be the case. And I would ask the court's indulgence to allow me to address that point because it is important to our side of the case. She was an Ethiopian citizen from birth. She was born in Eritrea as a province, but at that point it was part of Ethiopia. She holds an Ethiopian passport, which was issued to her in 1995 and renewed in 1997 while she was apparently living in Saudi Arabia with her husband. There is no reason to believe that the Ethiopian government would decline to accept her if she sent back. And
sure, but that does not justify designating Eritrea as an alternative, right?
This is, yes, and Your Honor is correct. That is the most difficult part of this case for the government. The State Department reports are clear about the mistreatment of Jehovah's Witnesses by the government of Eritrea.
So then you would concede that this should be remanded at the very least to change the order that she should only go to Ethiopia?
No, Your Honor, I don't concede that. I mean, we addressed this point in our brief. It is, as Judge Posner has pointed out, a difficult question. The cases seem to suggest, at least political opinion cases, we cite two from the First Circuit in this area, that the level of notoriety, the level of fame that a person's political opinion has, can be taken into account in judging whether that person has a well-founded fear.
That's absurd, because if she goes back to Eritrea, she's going to be frightened to go into any Jehovah's Witness church or whatever they have there.
I respectfully disagree with Your Honor. There's nothing in this is not the Busur case, which, if my memory serves me correctly, Your Honor wrote there. The government of Romania was outlawing the practice of the Jehovah's Witness religion because it was a proselytizing faith. This is not that case. There is no evidence that the government of Eritrea is forbidding the practice of Jehovah's Witness religion. There is no evidence in the case that they are closing temples. There is no evidence in the case that they are forbidding people to meet to practice the...
No, that's not the point. The point, right. What I said was, she will be afraid to go into one of these Jehovah's Witnesses kingdom halls or whatever they are, because that will identify her as an Eritrean, as a Jehovah's Witness. Once she's identified, according to your brief, she is then subject to the persecution that Eritrea meets out to Jehovah's Witnesses. That's quoted in your brief.
The State Department reports are quoted in my brief, Your Honor.
You wanted us to take judicial notice of the latest, so you must think they have a certain credibility.
Of course, we do, Your Honor.
And the report says that those who make their religion known, so this doesn't matter whether they're waving a flag with religion or just going to the temple or wherever they're going, when they make it known, they were denied passports, exit visas, licenses.
That's correct.
Et cetera.
Correct.
So you don't have to be someone that just, the minister or, someone like that.
Yes.
You can just be a practicing Jehovah's Witness.
If you become known, yes, I would.
Yes, because you become known if you go to where the service is.
If someone is looking. Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
Right.
That's correct, Your Honor. Now, all of this, I must say, presupposes that the court has reached this stage of the case, and my time is up, but I must point out that there is an adverse credibility finding by the immigration judge which said that he didn't believe that this person truly is a Jehovah's Witness.
No, he didn't actually say that. He doesn't believe that she's active. I mean, he has criteria. So if the Catholic, the Catholic say, well, if you don't know who founded the Catholic Church, you don't have a little card, and you don't go to Mass every day, I don't consider you an active Catholic. But that's irrelevant. The point is, if she's a Jehovah's Witnesses, and if she manifests her identity as a Jehovah's Witnesses by attending service in Eritrea, twice a year or something, she's exposing herself to persecution.
If she is a Jehovah's Witness and if she ends up in Eritrea, yes, Your Honor. My point is...
Where did he say that this is, a fabrication, she is not a Jehovah's Witness?
Page 56 of the record, Your Honor. Page 56 of the administrative record. It's page 9 of his opinion. This is where the Iwate case comes in. The end of the continued paragraph from page 8 of his opinion, page 55 of the administrative record.
No, that's where he says, I do not find that the respondent has presented by a preponderance of credible evidence that she is an active member of the Jehovah's Witness faith. He has some idea in his mind about there are active people who know, who founded it and all that stuff, and then there are these intermittent people.
Well, I would refer, Your Honor, to his discussion of her testimony, and this is where the Iwate case is relevant.
I mean, she did become a Jehovah's Witness at some time,
didn't she?
You don't even think that happened?
He had evidence in front of him which led him to believe that the entire claim was false.
I don't see that, because he says the respondent only indicated that she prays with friends and occasionally attends a particular prayer place. He didn't say that was wrong. He said, should be more convincing evidence, and he concludes that she's not active. What does he mean by not active?
Well, all right, I will concede, Your Honor, that the word active is perhaps an unnecessary element of that sentence. The point, though, is that she based her entire asylum claim on her assertion that she was a Jehovah's Witness in Ethiopia and continued to be here in the United States. When someone makes such a claim, it is a reasonable claim to test. And the immigration judge did so by questioning her at the hearing regarding her knowledge of a central feast on the Jehovah's Witness calendar. And he asked her twice to explain why Jehovah's Witnesses gather on that day, and she was unable to give him a coherent answer. He, having heard her testimony, he concluded that her claim, which she also made before the asylum officer, was simply not credible. He didn't believe that she was a Jehovah's Witness.
I think his reasoning process is different. He doesn't believe she's active. And that means, since she's not active, when she's sent back to Eritrea, well, they won't notice her, which is actually something you argued, too.
When it comes to the well-founded fear element of the case, Your Honor, the second half of this case, yes, I did argue that, because that's the immigration judge's, the second half of his decision. He begins by saying, well, even assuming that she is a Jehovah's Witness, I still find that she doesn't have a well-founded fear of persecution in Eritrea.
Because she can hide it.
Yes, because she would not be identified by the government of Eritrea as a Jehovah's Witness. That is where I argued that.
No, that was a terrible argument, because that's saying that because the government of Eritrea doesn't have a list of Eritreans who are Jehovah's Witnesses, she has no problem. It's ridiculous, because if they persecute Jehovah's Witnesses, then as soon as she is discovered to be a Jehovah's Witness, she's subject to persecution. So if she's smart, she will abandon Jehovah's Witnesshood.
If the court reaches the conclusion that the actions of the Eritrean government toward Jehovah's Witnesses are persecution, then yes.
I thought you'd agree to that.
Oh, no, I did not agree to that.
Oh, you don't think denying employment to people and denying passports and...
I didn't agree to that.
You don't think that's persecution?
I didn't
address... Religious persecution?
I didn't address that, Your Honor, because the immigration judge did not address it. He did not get to that point in his analysis.
I think that was fortunate, Colin.
My time is up. If I just may conclude by addressing briefly the Iwase case, which is the other very recent decision in this case, that case, which Judge Posner, you were a member of the panel on, holds that an adverse credibility finding must be based first and foremost on deficiencies in the applicant's testimony, and then if that standard is met, you then can address the issues of corroboration. When I first read the immigration judge's decision to prepare for this argument, I thought I might have a serious problem under Iwase, because he begins his adverse credibility analysis by talking about corroboration. But he then goes on to discuss the applicant's testimony. And so my point under Iwase to the court is that although his adverse credibility analysis is a bit of an upside-down cake, he did corroboration first, testimony second, he did address the applicant's testimony. So there is not a remand issue under Iwase, and if the court affirms the adverse credibility finding, as I urge you to do, you need not address these rather difficult questions regarding the government of Eritrea.
Can I just ask Ms. Cunningham about this identification card?
Yes.
IJ says it doesn't appear to be an official court document and could have been printed by anyone at any time.
That's correct.
Isn't that kind of a global statement you can make? Isn't that the kind of global statement you can make if someone committed a security card or a driver's license? I understand it came in by way of a friend obtaining it, but we often have in these cases someone else obtaining a document to support whatever claim.
I think that one of the troublesome issues that arises in asylum cases with respect to foreign documents is whether they are historical or not. Something that was pre-existing, in this case it would have been from the time period of about 1996, 1995, that's when she said that she started practicing the Jehovah's Witness faith in Addis Ababa, and she had some document dated from that period, that would be a much more probative, much more reliable than something that was admittedly manufactured after the fact for purposes of this case. She told the immigration judge that she gave the photograph that appears on the card to her friend, had her friend, she said, go to a Jehovah's Witness office in Addis Ababa and had the card made, and then the card was apparently brought back to the United States by some unnamed third person. The judge was troubled by her description of how the card came into being. He was troubled by the fact that the photograph is not historical, but rather was supplied.
Why would she have needed a card before she wanted asylum? Well, she would carry around little cards with their religion on them.
No, Your Honor, but so often in these cases we do see documents submitted.
Oh, sure, there are a lot of phony documents, but it's not the case that somehow you would expect that if she were really a Jehovah's Witness, she's been carrying a little card around ever since she became one.
No, the question really for purposes of judicial review was the immigration judge on sound and reasonable grounds in concluding that this particular card, this particular document, was not probative of her claim. And I think that given her testimony regarding the creation of the card, he was reasonable as a finder of fact.
Scanlon, is it your experience that IJs are confronted regularly, at least in recent years, with documentation, I mean, that is produced late or at the time of the hearing and lacks authenticity? Is that in the mind of, I guess I'm asking you to speculate a little bit, but in the mind of IJs?
Well, I can't.
Well, you handle it.
I can't answer
your question. You're a senior counsel in the department.
Right. I mean, I have seen cases myself where this problem arises regularly, where someone claims, for example, that he was a member of a political party or a religious party. We have dozens and dozens of cases arising from the Punjab in India. You've probably seen some of those yourself. Where someone claims that he was a member of a Sikh temple or a member of a Sikh political party back during the time when the Punjab was seeking independence from India. And the question is, well, all right, what do you have to reassure me that this claim is genuine? And often the consequence is documents are produced from relatives back in India, and often they are created on the spot by the purported office and said, yes, this person was a member of the Sikh temple in such and such town during 1993 to 1995. That doesn't mean it's out of court. That doesn't mean it's automatically a lie, but it's always a question of degree. It's always a question of reliability. If something bore a date, 1995, thank you for your contribution to this temple or something like that, that would be much more reliable than something that we know was manufactured for purposes of the case. This is that kind of a document, and as I said, the question is simply whether the immigration judge was reasonable in refusing to be persuaded by it.
I thank you.
It's been a long day, and I thank the court for its attention.
Thank you, Mr. Cunningham. Mr. Igbanu, your time has expired, but you may have a couple of minutes.
Just 1 minute, Your Honor, and thank you. On the same card issue, this petitioner was married at Kingdom Hall of the Jehovah's Witness in Eritrea.
Do you have any documentation of that?
That was the testimony, Your Honor, that's where she married Mr.
No, I'm not questioning, but in those ceremonies, as many often the case, she had no marriage certificate or some document celebrating the event?
I do not believe...
You said she was married. She didn't have possessed, she wasn't possessed of such a document, and she didn't seek to get that document, she just sought to get a membership document, right?
Correct.
And she could have, if there was such a document of marriage, she probably could have sought that too, right?
Not necessarily. In the atmosphere that they have in Eritrea, maybe not, maybe they wouldn't be issuing a whole bunch of Jehovah's Witness documents there. But to say that because she submits something after the fact that it's not credible, if you didn't have it, is preposterous. Because, I mean, if I may use an example...
I don't know that he found it not credible, he just didn't find it supportive of the claim. I guess there's somewhat of a difference. It just didn't tip the scale sufficiently for the IJ to conclude that it established her...
He gave it very little weight. Very little weight, if or none. And I see, regardless of all that literature and language and everything that the judge said, he first illegally put in the record the AO's assessment and then made up his mind about that, then everything else followed. That's just the way I read the way the judge came across. Once
You're just reading the testimony like the rest of us, right? You were not in attendance, so I figure you're not that you should be relating your assessment of the judge's demeanor, but particularly.
It's what he said, and
we have his oral ruling.
Before you leave, could I ask you an irrelevant question? You say Eritrea, and Mr. Cunningham says Eritrea. Can you? Do you know which is the correct pronunciation? Which is more, do you know how it's pronounced in Eritrea, for example?
It's a function of accents. I'm an African myself, so I say it differently. I probably say it more the way an Ethiopian and American will say it than the way Mr. Cunningham would say it.
You're close.
Yes. Okay. That's what I believe, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thanks to both counsel, and the case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.